The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We learned today from former Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Donna Brazile that the Clinton campaign, in her view, did rig the presidential nominating process by entering into an agreement to control day-to-day operations at the DNC. The Clinton campaign controlling the party's staffing, strategy, finances, communications, and that agreement was entered into in August 2015, a year before she defeated Senator Bernie Sanders. This must shock you.
Look, this is a real problem. But what we've got to do as Democrats now is we've got to hold this party accountable. When Tom Perez was first elected chair of the DNC, the very first conversation I had with him is to say, you have got to put together a Democratic Party in which everybody can have confidence that the party is working for Democrats rather than Democrats are working for the party. And he's being tested now. This is a test for Tom Perez. And either he's going to succeed by bringing Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders representatives into this process, and they're going to say it's fair, it works, we all believe it, or he's going to fail. And I very much hope he succeeds. I hope for Democrats everywhere. I hope for Bernie and for all of Bernie's supporters that he's going to succeed.
Very quickly, Senator, do you agree with the notion that it was rigged?
Yes.
Yes. Of course she does, because it was. And now, now it's out there in the public arena where we know, yes, it was rigged. You know, one thing to keep in mind. Hi, welcome to a Friday, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thanks for joining us. In this excerpt of Donna Brazile's book that was published yesterday by Politico, she tells the story of when she called Bernie Sanders to tell him that, yes, indeed, it was rigged. And you know what? After that, Bernie Sanders still went ahead and campaigned for Hillary Clinton, despite, disagreements over policy, despite personal disagreements, despite a lot of things. Bernie Sanders went out and gave it his all to try to defeat Donald Trump. And I know, look, the disgust for the Democratic Party and the way they've done things is high. I feel it. But honestly, my disgust for Donald Trump and what the Republicans are doing is even higher. Today, we're going to have someone on from the Americans for Tax Fairness organization to tell us what is in this tax cuts for billionaires tax act that they proposed, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. All I know is they're lying to us again. This is what they do. They lie. It is tax cuts for the wealthy. And for the rest of us, it's going to be more pain. This is what they do. And this is what the alternative is. Look, I get the people who say, the Democrats are bad. But put it this way, say they're the lesser of two evils, because in my book, until things change, they are. Tom Perez hasn't proven himself to be the fair arbiter that he said he was going to be. And yes, I wanted Keith Ellison to win that job. But frankly, I didn't think Keith Ellison was the perfect person for it either. The Democratic Party has problems. One way to fix it is to get inside and fix it from within. I give a lot of credit to people who, you know, go to the Democratic Party club meetings and try to change things from within, because that's the only way things are going to get better. As much as I love the idea of a third party, if we go that route in 2018, and especially in 2020, we're going to wind up with more of what we've got, which is unacceptable. It's untenable. I happen to be watching in the 11 o'clock hour again today, MSNBC. I like Ali Velshi and I like Stephanie Ruhle, and they have this Velshi Ruhle show on. And they had Roland Martin on again. It was the beginning of the week, I believe, that I played a clip from Roland Martin that was just so spot on. And he did it again. I'm not going to play the entire thing, but he, you know, he went on another rant and he hit the nail on the head. That we have a problem, but the way to fix the problem is not to say I'm fed up with the Democratic Party.
What's the takeaway here? Because for Bernie Sanders and for Bernie Sanders supporters, they're fighting mad.
Yeah, they're fighting mad, but guess what? You can fight last year's battle, or you can fight the battle that's coming up.
And
that is the 2018 midterms, state legislatures. If you don't deal with that, if this gerrymandering case that's before the Supreme Court right now, if they side with the Republicans, you're going to see political gerrymandering all across the country. Democrats better wake the hell up. They're getting their butts kicked left and right, and they can fight this thing out. Don't believe this BS about the Republicans, oh, they're imploding. No, they're not. They're fighting. But when it's election time, they come together.
They're raising tons of money.
The Bernie people better stop fighting the Hillary people and say, we're fighting each other while they're over here laughing at us.
Right. Democrats seem to be missing the long goal here.
Yes, 2018, 2020, and beyond. Redistricting is going to happen again in 2020. You lose more state legislatures,
you lose
power. 17, go to North Carolina. We haven't spent much time, I do it all the time on my show. North Carolina is sadistic what Republicans are doing there.
Mm-hmm.
They are stripping judicial races. They tried to flip. They lost the Supreme Court 4-3. They wanted to add two more people to the Supreme Court.
Right.
They want to give more power to the appeals court underneath the Supreme Court than the appeals court, because they have a veto.
Yep.
They have a veto-proof majority, and that's the problem. So the Bernie people, the Hillary people, y'all better stop playing, because Republicans are not playing games. So,
okay,
this is about power.
But will this unify them, or will this fracture them more?
No, what needs to happen with this, folks need to be honest about this, as Nina Turner said on my show today, it needs to be just truth and reconciliation. And what really needs to happen is the stars of the Democratic Party, President Obama, President Bill Clinton, Secretary Hillary Clinton, Senator Bernie Sanders, Senator Elizabeth Warren, the newcomers, Kamala Harris, Senator, and Cory Booker, Senator, they need to say, we need to take our power, raise 10, 20 million, get rid of our debt, put us in the black, and then say, this is our agenda.
Yeah.
But by keep playing games, they're going to keep losing.
If we keep this infighting going on, what we're going to wind up is more of this.
Your State Department still has some unfilled positions. Are you worried that the State Department doesn't have enough Donald Trump nominees
there
to push your vision through? Because other State Departments, including Reagan's at times, undermined his agenda. And there is a concern that the State Department currently is undermining your agenda.
So we don't need all the people that they want. You know, don't forget, I'm a business person, and I tell my people, well, you don't need to fill slots, don't fill them. But we have some people that I'm not happy with their thinking
process. But Assistant Secretary of State, you're not getting rid of that position.
But let me tell you, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters.
Really?
Because when it comes to it, that's what the policy is going to be.
You've seen that.
You've seen it strongly. We're filling up roles. We don't need all of the people. You know, it's called cost saving. You know, in the old days.
But you want your vision.
No, it's called diplomacy.
My vision is my vision anyway. It's called cost saving.
No, we need a State Department. He thinks it's all about him, and he's made it all about him. He thinks he's running a monarchy. He's running this authoritarian government, and that's what he wants. We've got to break free of this, and the only way to do it, I hate to say it, is with a unified Democratic Party. So let's get the anger out. Let's say what we've got to say. If it means booting Tom Perez and starting over again, do it. But we need to do it fast, because that's what we're going to wind up with, more of that. And that's unacceptable. I don't think we can survive as a nation. I really don't. All right. To the phones very quickly. Hi, is this Jason?
Jason from Simi Valley. How are you today, Nicole?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind, Jason?
Three things. Number one, just for you, I may have emailed it. You may not have seen it. Be very careful with your Amazon link.
Yes, I've heard about it.
Yeah, be careful. Okay. Number two, more to the point, today, as we're going through the Democrats and the whole thing, I do agree we need a unified Democratic Party. However, I will say something. You're going to get upset with me. I'm sorry. Bernie's not a Democrat. He's an independent.
Doesn't matter. He's caucused with the Democrats. It really doesn't. But, okay, and what's your third point?
My third point is that this week the indictments were the one bright spot, and I believe that will continue on. And I also believe, quite honestly, relitigating the whole primary thing is just, I agree with you, counterproductive.
It is.
Do I think Hillary, this whole thing with the Democrat, nothing illegal as far as we can tell was done. And I will just tell you right now, fine, it's time that we have to focus ahead. And I want you, above all else this weekend, to try and have some thing of a pleasant break.
Well, thank you. It's my birthday tomorrow, so I'll try.
It is?
Yeah.
How old are you, 29?
I'll actually be 58 tomorrow, which really sucks, because if I was 50, if I was 65, I'd be able to get Medicare. I never thought I'd want to be older, but I wish I was.
Ma'am,
yes?
I'm going to be 57 in January. I appreciate it because I live in California, which not too bad. My health insurance for one person, which I have the gold plan out here.
Uh-huh.
$990 a month.
Yes, and mine is going to be up around that coming up when I renew.
Which means we have to subscribe and contribute more to your show.
That's right. So, exactly.
You got to make those contributions. By the way, I just want to say, you keep going with what you're doing. I'm not a big fan of the Thursday thing with I think Howie is his name.
Right.
I think sometimes it does get to be Johnny One Note.
Okay.
That's just me.
All right.
But also, can we get another intro for him? Schmucky Chucky's been going on a while.
We'll see.
Please.
We'll see about that. All right.
Please.
I got to run.
Right.
Thanks for calling. I really got to go because we've got news coming up with Doug Christian. But first, a look at what's news.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
House Republicans on Thursday rolled out their Tax Cuts and Jobs Act at a cost of $1.5 trillion, the largest overhaul of the U.S. tax system since the 1980s. CNN has more.
A 429-page tax overhaul, the product of weeks of intense negotiations, now public and drawing support from the president.
I really believe we'll have it done before Christmas. I consider that to be one of the great Christmas presents.
It's a bill that dramatically cuts the corporate and small business tax rates, nearly doubles the standard deduction, increases the child tax credit, and collapses the number of individual tax brackets from 7 to 4. But it's also rife with potential problem areas. Northeastern Republicans already staging a mini revolt over a repeal of the state and local tax deduction for income. And powerful interest groups like realtors and home builders vowing to oppose the bill over its lack of new home buying credit and a $500,000 cap on the mortgage interest rate deduction for new home purchases. All as Democrats, many of whom pledged to oppose the bill before it was even released, attacked the proposal for favoring corporate cuts over relief for everyday Americans.
Big, wealthy corporations count far more than kids in this bill.
But Republicans are holding firm. Driven by political imperative, the leaders hope will eventually, somehow,
we're doing it,
allow them to achieve a once-in-a-generation goal.
We're going to get this done. Why? Because the American people deserve this.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke with Rachel Maddow about the tax bill Thursday night.
What they're trying to do is rush it through. Not one hearing on this major, major bill affecting our whole economic system, our tax code. No discussion, no analysis by outside experts. They introduced it today. They want to start marking it up, you know, doing amendments Monday. So they're afraid. They're embarrassed. I call this bill a dead fish. The more it's in the sun, the more it stinks. They don't want people to know about it.
The bill contains many controversial provisions, including one that allows purchasing 529 college savings plans for, quote, unborn children. Tucked away at the end of the bill is a controversial provision that would repeal the Johnson Amendment, a longstanding prohibition on churches and other religious institutions being involved in political activities and endorsing political candidates from the pulpit. U.S. employers added 261,000 jobs in October, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.1%, the lowest in nearly 17 years. The president leaves Friday on a 10-day five-nation Asia tour, visiting Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. His main goal will be to increase international support for an effort to deprive North Korea of resources as leverage to coerce it to give up nuclear weapons. Senate Democrats said Thursday they would push to have Attorney General Jeff Sessions return to the Judiciary Committee for further questioning, as new evidence shows he may have perjured himself. MSNBC's Chris Hayes and Ken Delanian explain.
Senator Patrick Leahy, the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, and Senator Al Franken, who asked Sessions the original question and got misleading information, are demanding that Jeff Sessions come back to Congress and clear this matter up because they feel like they were misled. Sessions' testimony evolved from "we didn't talk to Russians" to "we didn't talk to Russians about collusion."
I have no knowledge of any such conversations by anyone connected to the Trump campaign.
You don't believe that surrogates from the Trump campaign had communications with the Russians? Is that what you're saying?
I did not, and I'm not aware of anyone else that did. I have not seen anything that would indicate a collusion with Russians to impact the campaign.
And it's not alleged that the subject of collusion came up at this March 31st meeting, but it is alleged in those court documents, and Jeff Sessions is not disputing this, that Papadopoulos described how he had these contacts that could put together a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. And my source is telling me that Jeff Sessions nixed that idea, so I thought it wasn't a good idea.
My understanding of what the source is telling you about Sessions in that meeting is that he doesn't remember it, but definitely nixed the idea.
Yeah, essentially the source seems to be saying Sessions is not disputing it, but he has no specific recollection of Papadopoulos.
Former Trump advisor Carter Page also alleges that he informed Sessions of a trip to Moscow during the campaign. NBC News' Chuck Todd tells the Today Show that the attorney general may be in big trouble.
Is Jeff Sessions in trouble?
You know, in a normal Washington, I would say he's in extraordinary trouble. Look, he doesn't have a lot of confidence as far as the president's concerned, but the president's lack of confidence has nothing to do with why Capitol Hill is upset with him, since it is now, apparently, I believe we're up to the third time that Jeff Sessions has had to suddenly correct the record about either a meeting with Russian officials or something involving Russia. And then this last one, look, senators don't take kindly to be misled under oath, especially from the chief law enforcement officer. But it's the president's problems with him that create this sort of vice grip for Jeff Sessions. I mean, he's got a president here who's basically screaming,
yep,
please do something to distract from Russia. Investigate Hillary Clinton. I got
the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, now heard Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. And for a little bit more of what's happening in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, and Doug Christian's on the line. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Nicole, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So the president is on Air Force One, and I guess the Wi-Fi is working just fine because he's tweeting away.
Despite the 11 minutes of outage, which think about that. What a threat that is, that the president, who has actually conducted some pretty serious policy agendas with his 140-character tweets, that somehow some employee at Twitter can manage it and take the whole thing down. We're living in a time where we are in a potential nuclear conflict with North Korea, mm-hmm. and there isn't that kind of control on the president's word.
Yeah, apparently this was a third-party contractor. It was his or her last day working there, and decided just to take down the president's Twitter account. It was down for a full 11 minutes.
You know, if you were a novelist and you proposed and you wrote all this stuff down, your editor would throw it out. This is just unbelievable.
Yep.
Come to something that you know, that actually would happen.
Yeah. No, it would be rejected. But everything, the whole reality star gets elected, you know, president of the United States and turns out to be a narcissistic megalomaniac. It would never get picked up because it would be so unbelievable.
And rarely has it been so extreme, where you've had such a narcissist that literally almost every question you ask of him or about him is always revolves back to him.
About
and
him.
About his poll rating.
I just played a clip before What's News from the interview. I guess he did an interview on Fox last night. Oh, my God, shocker. He did an interview on Fox with Laura Ingraham. She was asking about staffing up at the State Department. He said, no, you know, we're cutting costs. We don't have to fill all those jobs. And it's all about me anyway. It's what I think. It's my policies. It's about me. Everything is about him. This just crossed my Twitter feed. Just in, I guess this is from yesterday. Trump withdraws U.S. from international agreement to fight oil and gas corruption. I mean, what is wrong with this man?
He is. It's been proposed several times that he's suffering from multiple mental disorders, including dementia. But of course, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not one to judge. But this is not normal.
No.
This is not normal. And, it's giving everybody pause. It's even said that even the far right in Europe are pulling away from him.
Oh, really?
Which is amazing. Chuck.
I hadn't heard that. All right. So what else is happening today? Sergeant Bo Bergdahl is getting off without prison time, huh?
Exactly, and of course, President Trump had to go against the judiciary, this time the military court, once again, saying it was a disgrace. Of course, we have never seen a president who has second-guessed the judiciary or the military courts.
Right,
it's
and apparently,
astonishing.
Apparently, the judge or whoever it was who hands down the decision in a military court said that the president's comments before this, when he said he thought Bo Bergdahl should get the death penalty or something like that, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, but basically the president's irresponsible comments contributed to this.
Yes. And of course, he had just earlier made equally outrageous comments regarding the suspect in New York.
That's right. First, he said it sent him to Gitmo, and then he said the death penalty. Again, the defense is going to have a field day saying there's no way they could get a fair jury.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The if you're a defense, you'd say, look. Forget it. We can't get a fair trial, I'm not sure whether he knows what he's doing or he doesn't know what he's doing. Either way, it's disastrous. It's disastrous for the country. And of course, now as he goes over to Asia, he's tweeting mercurial tweets about how Japan should be worried over the conflict with North Korea. Well, what does that mean?
Right. No, he's a loose cannon, and he's very dangerous. By the way, he's also the guy who said that the Central Park Five should have the death penalty. This guy is just has no business being anywhere near the Oval Office, let alone sitting behind the desk. That's why.
No.
Yeah. We're in.
No, I spent the afternoon yesterday with Hillary Rodham Clinton and Dianne Feinstein at a get together at the Democratic Women's Club over in Washington, D.C. And it was very interesting to hear her take on the election and her kind of recovering from the shock of this spill.
Did Donna Brazile's book come up at all?
No, and that was the elephant in the room. That was if journalists had been allowed to ask questions, that is the first question they would have asked. Because, of course, then Elizabeth Warren piped in and said, absolutely right. The DNC was a rigged system.
Yep.
But she only got friendly fire from Dianne Feinstein.
Dianne Feinstein is being challenged in a primary this year, and her challenger, I hope, wins. Dianne, it's time for Dianne Feinstein to go home. We need some new blood in the Democratic Party. And this is the discussion we were having before What's News about the fact that the Democratic Party needs a, you know, a come to Jesus moment. This is not the time to keep litigating or relitigating the 2016 election. But the Democratic Party needs a good house cleaning and needs to start over with some younger people, with some new blood, with some fresh ideas, because if they keep doing what they've been doing, we're going to wind up with four more years of Donald Trump and the Republicans running roughshod over this nation as they're doing right now.
That's exactly right. And you're absolutely right. And they're making they're so confused. They don't even know what they're doing with what they call tax reform. It's only tax shift. It's taking any benefits that would go for people and giving them to corporations.
Sure.
According to trickle-down economics, which has been proven over and over again not to work. One of the most outrageous Nobel Prizes was in economics to Milton Friedman for trickle-down economics. It does not work.
No, this is the reverse Robin Hood theory. It's stealing from the poor and the, you know, middle class to give to the very rich.
Right. And it's also this idea that somehow if people on government salaries don't throw the money that they earn back into the economy, which, of course, is absolutely ridiculous. What about the WPA? What about military buildup during World War II that actually stimulated the economy? And so it's just ridiculous to consider that somehow people who are paid by the government, their money does not go back into the economy. That is just untrue.
Mm-hmm. No, well,
and so, but
it's the people who live, you know, who are middle class, who spend the money they bring in. That's why tax cuts for the poor and for the middle class work. But for the very wealthy, it's money they don't even know that they have.
That's exactly right. And, of course, then the mortgage interest deduction, taking that away from people. I mean, hello, that is one of the main reasons people buy homes, is to be able to get that mortgage interest deduction.
That's right.
And then taxing states that have higher income tax, the state income taxes. Wow. I mean, this whole thing is just a garbly-gook mess that's kind of thrown out there to appease to the donor classes once again, just like they were doing with health, what they call health reform,
right?
Which was nothing but, again, the same goals, which was to give more money to the wealthy because they don't have enough, and take it from people who need it. You know, take away their health care.
You got that right. Anything else happening today we need to know about?
Well, I mean, I feel that, of course, the Mueller thing is going along. There is now a trial date has been set for
May 7th.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Bob Mueller is Trump's worst nightmare. And Trump can only thank himself for having brought Mueller to the table, because if he hadn't fired James Comey, this probably wouldn't have happened. And
that's very true.
Yeah, and so he really should just look in the mirror, and he should thank himself for rescuing this the United States from his corruption and from his incompetence by examining all of it.
Right, and I did read somewhere that there are maybe as many as four more sealed indictments sitting there just waiting to see the light of day, which we can only hope. And that's what's making Trump so crazy right now.
Right, and from what I gather, some of the people who are suspected of cooperating are now kind of being shut out of the White House. Like, they might be the ones. It's putting a state of paranoia within the White House that, I may have been tapped. I don't know. It couldn't happen to a lovelier group of people. It really couldn't.
Well,
they deserve what they're getting, and they invited it only on themselves.
Right. All right. Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Thank you, Doug.
Always a pleasure, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
All right. Coming up, we are going to talk about this tax reform, or whatever we want to call it, the tax cuts bill. We have the legislative director from Americans for Tax Fairness joining us to tell us exactly what is in this bill. So stick around. That's coming up next on the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll be right back.
John Yoo says America should send robots to fight our wars. I'll tell you why we should ignore you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Noting that the U.S. military was developing armed, autonomous robots to serve as battleground soldiers in our wars, a 2015 New York Times article asked an important question: can they learn to make moral choices? But wait, what about us humans? When it comes to war, can we learn to make moral choices? Remember that President George W. Bush chose to torture al-Qaeda suspects, including innocent civilians, by waterboarding them. Where was the morality in that? It was, of course, immoral. But at the request of the White House, an ambitious, eager-to-please lawyer in the Justice Department wrote a memo that whitewashed waterboarding, summarily decreeing that such torture was not, technically, torture. The author of that memo sanctioning Bush's immoral warfare was John Yoo. His name is relevant to the current question about robot morality because Yoo is now at the American Enterprise Institute, a nest of far-right neocon war hawks, where he's become a leading booster of turning robots into our killing machines. In a September Wall Street Journal article, Yoo exults that, unlike humans, robots won't get fatigued in battle or become, quote, emotionally involved in the business of killing humans. Not merely cold-blooded warriors, these efficient machines are no-blooded. Plus, they're much cheaper than a flesh-and-blood army. But you might ask, what if they go rogue, turning into an army of rampaging Terminators and using their artificial intelligence against us civilians? Tut-tut, says you, admonishing us to, quote, have more confidence in our ability to develop autonomous weapons within the traditional legal and political safeguards. This is Jim Hightower saying, huh? Come on, John. You're the guy who carelessly, flagrantly, and immorally violated those very safeguards in your torture memo. Trust you? No thanks.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Back and hi, I'm Sandra Sahlstrom, please.
This is she.
Oh, hey, Sandra, it's Nicole Sandler calling. Tell the listeners who you are. She spent 7 years at the Treasury Department under President Obama, the last five as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Legislative Affairs for Tax and Budget, and she's now the Legislative Director of Americans for Tax Fairness. We can find them at americansfortaxfairness.org. Sandra Sahlstrom, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure.
I wanted to get you on, somebody from Americans for Tax Fairness, to talk about what is in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I guess we should be thankful they didn't call it the Cuts Act, or maybe it would have been more accurate if they did. Stephen Colbert made a funny joke. At least he was talked into not using cuts with a K. Yeah. So anyway, there's that.
No, indeed. And we were calling it the cuts to Medicare, cuts to Medicaid, cuts to education. It could be the cut act. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
You could do a lot of cuts. The cuts for middle-class America, the cuts to middle-class American act, or for the wealthiest among us. They keep telling us, no matter who, and I've heard a lot of interviews over the last 24 hours with Republicans from Paul Ryan on down, and they're all saying, oh, this is going to benefit middle-class America. That's what it's for. Who benefits from this bill?
So I think it's 100% clear that it is corporations, the most profitable corporations, and the wealthiest Americans who are the winners of this tax bill. They make out like bandits, and unfortunately, it is the middle class, working class Americans, even upper middle class Americans, that are going to be left holding the bag. And I think, you know, the corporate tax cut has been the dream of Republicans for a long time. And, you know, a lot of independent analysis that I've read today on the plan really makes that clear that, you know, they are doing a lot of funny math on the individual side, you know, phasing in and phasing out tax credits and deductions that, you know, middle-class Americans use to give huge permanent tax breaks to corporations. So really it's, you know, cuts on the individuals, on the middle-class Americans to really, you know, cuts to the programs and the services they use and increases sometimes on their taxes just so we can see a huge permanent corporate tax cut.
Right. And that's the thing. Well, there's a lot of things that we can get to as we talk today. The corporate tax cut from 35% down to 20%, first of all, is kind of a misnomer because no corporations pay 35%, do they?
Exactly. No, they really don't. I think the average is somewhere closer to 18%, mm-hmm. and there are many, many that pay in the single digits. But yes, you're absolutely right. There are very few that pay that headline 35% rate.
Right, and many that don't pay any, like GE, they take advantage of all the loopholes, and they get it down to where they pay no corporate tax at all. That's why the average comes down so low, because so many of them pay little, where it's the small businesses who don't have access to the big attorneys and the expensive accountants who maybe do pay the higher end of that, the tax rate. We see the stock market at record highs, and Donald Trump likes to tout how great it's doing, even though it was doing really great under Obama for the last few years as well. Why do corporations need such tax cuts if they're doing so well? They're making record profits, aren't they?
It's a great question, one that I ask myself every single day, and I would say they don't. You know, you're absolutely right that they are making record profits, and they have been for a number of years. And you look at average workers and the wages they're making, and they have stagnated. So where is the justification? Even today, the jobs numbers came out. You know, the unemployment rate mm-hmm. is down at 4.1%. I think jobs were, 261,000 created last month. And, yeah, these are just, not numbers that really, give us evidence that corporations need a big tax cut. It seems like they're doing just fine. They're not helping their workers, and they're not even trying to hide it. You've heard many say, when asked recently, if you got a big tax cut, would you put that back into your workforce? Yeah. Would you give your workers a raise? And many don't even try to hide it. They say, no, we want to, purchase our stocks, do stock buybacks, pay bigger dividends, really help our shareholders who, again, are our wealthiest Americans and folks that are already doing just fine.
It's amazing. And they put the word jobs in the title of this bill. Has it ever been proven, or is there any evidence even, that tax cuts for the wealthy, for the corporations, create jobs?
There really isn't. Again, you've seen a lot of analysis of a lot of nonpartisan economists that do lean right, that do lean left, and everybody agrees that corporate tax cuts just don't create jobs. They don't increase wages. There's been a lot of talk recently. The chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors at the White House, obviously a biased economist, put out a report, trying to claim that if we do this massive corporate tax cut, a family would see a $4,000 increase, in their wages, and, it's been roundly debunked. And they did some crazy math that just tried to show that all of the corporate tax cut, trickles down to workers. But when you really dig in and you look at, economists, as I say, across the spectrum, people think maybe 25%, maybe 30% of that corporate tax cut is actually going to be, passed down to workers. But really, again, it's just, tilted towards your corporations and your owners of those corporations, and which are your shareholders and folks that get dividends.
Right. Now, on the personal end, they say the individual deduction and the standard deduction for couples is going to be doubled, but that's only for people who don't itemize. Who doesn't itemize?
So actually, yeah, when you double that standard deduction, it would be the vast majority of taxpayers that don't itemize. And so while they would see a larger standard deduction, then what you're going to see is a lot of folks who then, lose those tax breaks that do give them, you know, more money back in their pocket. And certainly we're going to get into some of those. But, you know, you look at the deductions for student loan interest, for, you know, medical expenses, for a lot of things that really do help working families. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of reporting on the state and local tax deduction and what they were going to do with that. You know, ultimately they came up with a compromise, which I will put in air quotes, because it really doesn't seem to solve the problem for most taxpayers. Instead of letting them deduct all of their state and local taxes, they now can do up to $10,000 of property taxes. But of course, again, when you look at that, contrast that with corporations, will still get to deduct the full cost of their state and local tax. Income taxes, property taxes. Yeah, so exactly. So we didn't touch the state and local tax deduction for corporations, but we significantly pared it back for individuals.
And is it just that people don't ask the questions, that they're not paying attention, that, that this is out? Because I had no idea that that was the case. I thought state and local taxes, that applied across the boards, but that's just to citizens.
Yep, just on the individual.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what you'll see just throughout this bill, Nicole. And I think it's, you know, that's the thing, right? It's going to take some time for people to really analyze this, to dig in. It's, I don't remember, you know, more than 450 pages, you know, of bill text. And, you know, that's what they want to do, right? They want to rush this thing through as fast as possible so people don't have time to figure out what's in it. You know, there's going to be a lot of these little sleeper issues that I think really will, you know, incense people when they learn about them. But, you know, they unveiled this bill yesterday, even just today, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee has already put out another updated draft, what they call the chairman's mark. And then when they actually start marking up the bill, you know, where they go through and amend it, he is going to drop in another one. They call it the amendment in the nature of a substitute. So you won't even see that until, you know, the markup starts right then and there. He starts with that first amendment. So we're going to see the third iteration of this bill. And he said in his statement, you know, when he announced today's version and that he's going to put out the next one, that he will be making more, you know, significant changes in that bill. So, again, these are things people won't have seen until the markup actually begins.
And with, I think it's 429 pages, and you know, most of us still don't know what's in it. I was able to pull some of the more, I think, egregious provisions in it out. I mean, some of them are just crazy. Things like... again, this is a tax bill, and the tax bill would rescind the Johnson Amendment. That was the amendment that allows churches to endorse political candidates from the pulpit, which what that has to do with taxes, other than the fact that churches don't pay any taxes, and that, you know, the only reason they are able to get away with that is because they're barred from proselytizing politics from the pulpit.
Yep.
And this rescinds that, which I find totally unbelievable. Like, how did they
do
that?
Right. Well, and to your point, so we are a large coalition here at Americans for Tax Fairness, and I actually got an email just a little bit ago from one of the faith groups and sending us a letter showing us 102 faith organizations that have so far signed onto this letter opposing just that repeal of the Johnson Amendment. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things like that that, you know, are going to be stuck in there, that are stuck in there now, and will be stuck in that next version. And, you know, they just don't want people to figure out what they are.
I mentioned we are speaking with Sandra Sahlstrom, from Americans for Tax Fairness, the legislative affairs director. Who tell us about Americans for Tax Fairness. It's a coalition of groups, yes?
Yeah, exactly. We are a coalition of 425 national, state, and local endorsing organizations that all come together under this principle of tax fairness. We should all, you know, pay what we owe, you know, create a more fair tax system, and, you know, enough revenue to fund the services that we all rely on, that give us safe roads to drive on and, you know, good schools to educate our children and so many more services, you know, Medicare, Medicaid. And so it's a really broad coalition of organizations from, you know, faith groups to environmental groups and, you know, everybody in between that really says we need a tax system that works for average Americans, not, you know, the wealthiest and most profitable corporations.
Sounds good to me. I mean, look, this is how we pay for things. And there was supposed to be one of the priorities, allegedly, of this administration was going to be an infrastructure bill. The only way to do infrastructure is with revenue. The only way to get revenue is to raise taxes. Or if you're a Republican, you cut services. And that's what they're cutting. I mean, some of the other cuts that I noticed, and I'm sure you've got some, feel free to throw them out there. It ends a $7,500 credit for the purchase of electric vehicles and overhaul other renewable energy related provisions within the tax code. Just as other nations are starting to ramp up production of electric vehicles, I think it was China, by like 2025 or something, they expect the majority of their cars to be electric vehicles, and we're doing away with the tax credit for purchase of electric vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really, you know, a question of priorities. And you look at these, you know, I pulled out a couple examples as I've been going through, just, you know, things that have really stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now, your classroom teachers can deduct up to $250 of expenses that they pay out of their pocket. So, you know, if they need extra supplies for the classroom, scissors, you know, maybe some lab equipment for science experiments.
And they all do.
You know,
they all do.
All those things.
Right.
Exactly. And there's, you know, every teacher does it, right? They just, you know, dip into their own pocket and pay for these extra things. They can deduct up to $250 of that. They've now eliminated that in this new bill.
Wow.
But yet we've created a new deduction for corporations. We allow them to, currently in the code, they can, you know, expense over time, basically write off the depreciation of equipment and things that they purchase. Now in this new bill, they're going to let them immediately deduct the full cost of all of those purchases. So, you know, millions of dollars in equipment purchases for a corporation, they can write that off, but your teacher can no longer write off $250 he or she spends on classroom supplies.
Unbelievable.
You know, it's just outrageous, these priorities. And, you know, you look at the estate tax, they are going to double the exemption, you know, on the estate tax, meaning essentially no one will pay it, but in that amount, going from what it is now to doubling that exemption, gives each of the wealthiest estates a tax cut worth more than Pell Grants for 1,100 low-income students.
Oh, my goodness. Now, the estate tax, we should mention, this applies to what, 0.2%, the top 0.2%, not 2%, two-tenths of a percent of the wealthiest people in the country. It's akin to something like, I think it's like 80 families or something this applies to. And yet they put it out there. It's like, this is saving the family farm and the family business. Yep. That's just complete and utter nonsense.
Yeah, well, and you look at the history, you know, in 2001, 2.2%. So again, a very small number, but 2.2% of estates paid the estate tax. In 2015, as you just said, it was 0.2%. I haven't seen analysis yet on, you know, how many estates will face the tax, you know, at this new exemption level. You know, will it be 0.02%? But again, it's only here then for the next 5 years. After that, we know zero estates will face the estate tax because they're eliminating it.
Right. So that becomes permanent, where some of the smaller, you know, modest benefits to middle class families, those phase out after 5 years.
Exactly. That's right. They create this new $300 tax credit for, you know, each tax filer. So for the parent and non-dependent children, so kids, you know, who may be away at college. But exactly, 5 years later, that's gone. So I actually just saw an analysis piece that I hadn't had a chance to read, but the headline struck me in the Washington Post, talking about the Republicans' model family. They had, you know, drawn up these examples of a model family making $59,000 a year and, you know, how much more they would have in their pockets after this new tax bill. But what they don't tell you is apparently that's what it looks like in year one. But then the headline of this says GOP's model family gets a tax cut in year one and a tax hike in year seven.
Wow.
So I think after, you know, some of those things phase out in later years, then they're going to see their taxes go up.
Wow. Do you have any more of those that we haven't seen yet that we don't know about?
You know, it's a great question. I'm trying to think of other, you know, some of these, there's, you know, yeah, lots of them out there, I think, as people are going to continue to dig in and try to figure that out. But I just think, you know, again, this is why they're going to rush it through as quickly mm-hmm. as possible before people have time to really do this analysis and run these numbers and see, you know, what it actually means. I keep hearing Leader Schumer in the Senate say he keeps calling this thing a dead fish.
That's
and, you know,
right.
the more sunlight it gets, the more it starts to stink. And I think that's exactly right.
For once, he's spot on. Question right. from Robert Hill in New York City in the chat room. He's asking, are they attempting to repatriate corporate money stashed overseas with this proposal?
Yes, that is a great question, Robert. Thanks for asking it. So yes, right now corporations owe 35% tax rate on all those profits they've stashed offshore. What this bill is going to do is give them a 12% rate. So we're going to more than cut in half what they would owe and reward them for this bad behavior, for taking these profits, booking them overseas, and saying, okay, now you have to bring it back, but you get a 12% rate. And I think, again, in the stark contrast here, the new lowest rate on taxpayers, you know, it goes up from 10% to 12%. So mm-hmm. we actually, you know, increase the rate at the bottom. And you think of our lowest income taxpayers are going to pay a 12% rate, and that's the same exact rate that we're going to give corporations wow. on all those, you know, $2.6 trillion is what is stashed offshore right now.
Wow.
And we're going to give them a 12% rate to bring that back.
That's insane. There's another one. November is National Adoption Month, and I know I'm an adoptive yep. mother, and I actually adopted my daughter from Kazakhstan. Many years ago, so yeah, 17 years ago now, this month, as a matter of fact, this will end the adoption expenses tax credits. So,
right.
You know, you got adoption, whether you do it internationally or domestically, whether you go through the foster system or a private adoption, it's expensive. And this is going to keep children from finding a forever home.
Right. I mean, it's just, again, where are your priorities? And this is also, you know, a party that has spent a lot of time really talking up adoption as an alternative, you know, in their anti-choice view that, you know, we should really be putting more resources into adoption, really focusing there,
yep.
you know, and yet now we're going to completely eliminate the adoption tax credit. And as you say, I mean, help these children find a forever home. It's just, it's unbelievable to me that, you know, these are the priorities again. And it all just goes back to give profitable corporations a huge tax break. We're going to eliminate, you know, things like the adoption tax credit. It's just
right.
It blows my mind.
At the same time, this was one that I found truly incredible. It allows 529 savings plans. Those are the college fund plans
yep.
for quote unborn children. So
right.
you can start a 529 savings plan for a fetus.
Right. That's crazy. But yet, yeah, now you can no longer deduct, you know, your high cost medical expenses. So someone who gets cancer
That's
all
right.
of a sudden, you know, could face some very, very high medical bills. Under current law, you can deduct, you know, those extraordinarily high medical costs, and under their bill, no more. So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's pretty outrageous.
And in this one, I found, especially this year, I live in South Florida, so we went through Hurricane Irma here. But after Harvey and Irma and Maria and the fires in California, and we know there was just a breaking news story right before I came on the air that there was a, I'm going to see if I can find it so I don't sound so out of it when I'm saying this. Here it is. Trump administration released a scientific report detailing the growing threats of climate change. The report stands
right.
in stark contrast to the administration's efforts to play down humans' role in global warming, withdraw from an international climate accord, and reverse Obama-era policies aimed at curbing America's greenhouse gas output. But this says unequivocally, here, it's extremely likely that human influence has been the dominant cause of observed warming since the mid-20th century. For warming over the last century, there is no convincing alternative explanation supported by the extent of observational evidence. And they're saying it's just going to keep getting worse. So what do? It ends deductions for personal casualties. Now, there are carve-outs for theft, fire, flood, or volcanic eruption. They do apparently have carve-outs for Harvey, Irma, and Maria. But if we get hit with another hurricane, by the way, hurricane season doesn't end until November 30th, this year or any time in the future, we go through another Harvey, for instance, or another Maria in Puerto Rico, and your losses will not be deductible.
Right. You're just out of luck. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah, and I think back to, you know, children. I was just another one I was looking here, and one that I feel like we absolutely have to mention. So you look at, you know, the child tax credit, and so that's another big thing they're going to tout is this increase in the child tax credit. But again, the thing that they're not going to highlight is the changes that they're making to the eligibility. So right now, you can file with something called an ITIN, an individual taxpayer identification number, instead of having to have an SSN, a Social Security number. Hmm. What they're going to do is require that anyone getting the child tax credit, any taxpayer, so the parent, has to have a Social Security number. So what that means is it's going to block eligibility for potentially 3 million children in working families who have an ITIN instead of an SSN. So these are mixed status families, you know, maybe immigrant parents who came, have a legal status child, and all of a sudden no longer are we going to be able to, you know, get the child tax credit for them. And it's about 80% of children who would be adversely affected were actually born in this country and are U.S. citizens. So we're going to take that child tax credit away from these families by making them have to have a Social Security number.
Wow. Again, we're speaking with Sandra Sahlstrom of Americans for Tax Fairness. They're at AmericansForTaxFairness.org. There was a video I came across earlier today when I was researching this. It's something that you guys, I guess you guys put out along with a public citizen, and it's a couple of billionaires speaking about what these tax cuts mean for them. We'll listen to a little bit of that.
Is the GOP tax plan tax reform or just massive tax cuts for wealthy and corporations? Of course, my first response is, what's the difference?
Let's call it tax reform.
Exactly.
How can you say no? I love it.
Does it bother you that it will increase the federal deficit by $2.4 trillion?
It makes some of our folks a little uncomfortable, the fact that they've been on record a few times talking about the deficit.
If you're raising a deficit to pay for, say, like unemployment insurance or child nutrition, that is very serious. But if you increase the deficit in order to give tax cuts to billionaires like us, well, then it makes a lot more sense. Are you concerned that in order to pay for these tax cuts, the government will have to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, public education, and many more priorities for working families? Well, first of all, I have to say I don't know what any of those programs are.
You know, they're making light of it, and it is funny to make fun of billionaires. But the point they made right there, cutting Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, public education, those are all programs. There are cuts to all of those, even though Donald Trump ran on no cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. Did I imagine that, or did he not run on that?
Exactly. I know. It's amazing how quickly our memories fade on these things. But no, you're absolutely right. These are promises he made and promises that they, are very quickly happy to break, it seems like. And I think that's something that, you know, all your listeners just need to understand that, you know, the Republicans will tell you, no, this is not a cut to Medicare, Medicaid, you know, nutrition assistance, education. Mm. And that's what they want you to believe, but that's exactly what this will result in. And, you know, they've already said, I read an article, you know, that just last week or so, talking about next year and the budget, and they've said our priority next year is going to be deficit reduction. And so they are coming back for these programs. They have already laid out in their budget, you know, $1 trillion cut to Medicaid and $470+ billion cut to Medicare.
Yep.
And so they've already laid out their priorities. They want to do it. And, you know, it's just not in this tax bill, but you better believe it's coming next year and years beyond.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not funny. It's laughable, but it's not funny that when Obama was in office, when there's a Democrat in the White House, they care about deficit reduction. When it's a Republican, that it's not an issue. One other thing that they're floating, you know, you mentioned the markups and the new version coming out and another one and, different provisions being added. They're still debating on whether or not to put the repeal of the Affordable Care Act mandate in this bill.
Yep, just today I saw the headline, Kevin Brady, again, that chairman of the Ways and Means Committee that will first consider this bill, and he said that the president is still pushing very hard to include a repeal of the individual mandate from the Affordable Care Act. So, yeah, we could very well see that in the Monday version. And, again, I mean, talk about things that, you know, don't belong in this bill, you know, but they're going to keep coming for health care one way or another. You know, I know a lot of folks expended a lot of energy to, you know, fight back these horrible repeals of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, it's just going to keep coming, and we've just got to keep fighting. I heard somebody say, I thought was very right, that, you know, that was a health care bill with some hidden tax cuts, and now this is a tax bill with hidden health care cuts.
Right. Well, and the health care bill, the health, you know, the repeal, it wasn't really a replace. The repeal bill was all about tax cuts for the wealthy. It was a wealth care bill, not a health care bill. So I guess that's my last question for you, Sandra, is what can people do? What do we do now to fight back against this?
Call your member of Congress. You know, that is the first, the most important, the easiest thing you can do. You know, pick up the phone. If you don't know the number, you don't know who it is, look it up. You can call the main House switchboard, which mm-hmm. I should have that number in front of me, and I don't. But, you know, if you don't know who your member is, you can call that main line. You give them your zip code. You know, they will patch you through. But members do listen to the people who can vote for them. You know, you may think, oh, I live in a district with this conservative member, but, you know, they listen, and that is what they care about, is what the constituents say. So I would say the easiest way to fight back, you know, the most effective at this moment is pick up the phone, call your member of Congress, say, I don't support this, you shouldn't either. You know, there are a list of reasons why you shouldn't, but, you know, just whatever matters to you, if it's the cuts,
yep.
you know, to student loan interest, to the adoption credit, I mean, any of these, and just call your member and say, you know, oppose this terrible bill.
That sounds great. Sandra Sahlstrom of Americans for Tax Fairness, AmericansForTaxFairness.org. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.